The show will begin shortly.
Come on, man, we need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Down the middle of the field, he's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Broken interception.
Touchdown, Giants.
And we welcome you to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Howard Cross, I'm Lance Meadow. With you for the next 60 minutes as we will be discussing all the latest news regarding the New York Giants. We'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You can also follow and interact with us on Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat. A lot to delve into over the next hour. Howard, OCU Mignora had his retirement presser. We'll discuss that. We'll get into some of the injury news. How's everything?
Everything's good, Lance. Everything's good. I've been enjoying being in camp this week, watching everybody work out, hearing some of the coaches talk about the progress, and, you know, listening to the fans and what they think of what's going on. I've heard some interesting things, some funny things, heard some crazy things, of course, but it's been really good.
Yes, this program will bring that out of you in terms of the all-around opinions of the fan base, and we're certainly looking forward to hearing from the fans. Let's start, though, Howard, with OCU Mignora before we get to some of the team news. And, you know, he was very sentimental in terms of reflecting back on his career today during the presser. And when you think of OCU Mignora, clearly you think about that great defensive line, Howard, that set the tone in the trenches and had a knack for getting to the quarterback time and time again.
You know, OC was the speed guy in the group. He was the guy that had the quick get off, the guy that could get around the edge. You know, historically not the biggest of the group, but it was the fastest of the group by far. Faster than Strahan, faster than Tuck, faster than JPP. He could really move. And that made him a more valuable piece in that pass rush. When they said they made a joke and called him the NASCAR group, he was part of the NASCAR group. He could get there. I remember him sacking, I believe it was Donovan McNabb, like six or seven times in a game here at the stadium. And it, I mean, that's the kind of guy he was. He made great plays. He did a great job. He did it for the Giants. He went on and played in a couple other spots, but he really did a great job with the Giants. And he'll always remember those Super Bowl rings, and that's why he wants to retire a Giant.
Absolutely, and that's what he noted. He said the first Super Bowl victory against the New England Patriots was extremely special, and Tom Coughlin even mentioned during his presser today, Howard, the one photograph that he has in his office is Tom Brady on the ground and Justin Tuck, Michael Strahan, OCU Mignora slowly walking away from that scene.
It was tough, man. Tom had, I think the kryptonite he has is the Giants in that NASCAR package. He'd probably think, like, yeah, I could take him now, but he didn't want to take him back then. It was tough.
And you think about what he did also during the 2011 season, Howard. Mm-hmm. He was hurt. He had that ankle injury. So he was out for the majority of the season. And he comes back for the season finale against the Dallas Cowboys. And then all of a sudden, things start to trigger. Everything falls into place. And the Giants ride it out to another Super Bowl victory.
You know, again, the Giants have historically been, unfortunately, over the last few years, a 9-7 type team. And when they make the playoffs, they make a lot of noise when they get there. They get healthy seemingly at the right time. They get the right guys going. OC was a big part of both of those Super Bowl runs. You can't count a guy like that out. They're looking and they'll be searching. They'll be hoping to find another guy like that. I know people talk about JPP and they're excited and hoping that, you know, for his well-being. But you don't find guys like OC every day.
And JPP also was brought up during the press conference. OCU Mignora mentioned that he had spoken to him via FaceTime. He says that he's back to his full spirits. Obviously, no timetable upon his return. And the other thing that he mentioned, in case you did miss the press conference, is he's taking a job with the NFL. He'll now be going overseas to London. And he was quoted, Howard, as saying he wants to be the Michael Strahan of London right now.
Wow, that would be big to be in that market, to be the Michael Strahan of London. I think OC is the guy. For that, I mean, he's, you know, an international kind of guy. He's awesome from that standpoint. He's well spoken. The league picked a good guy, a guy that doesn't have anything around him, nothing touching him. They couldn't pick the better person to do it.
You know, what amazes me, not just about O.C. Howard, but a lot of players within the franchise, specifically during the time period that played with O.C., Michael Strahan, David Deal, Sean O'Hara, even yourself going back a little bit further, everybody's had some type of a touch or connection to broadcasting. It's amazing how all of these players have had successful careers after they stepped off the football field.
You know, the broadcasting thing is funny. I mean, when we started playing years ago, the whole thing was the press was the enemy. You know, don't talk to the press under any circumstances. Don't give them anything They like you 1 week, they'll dislike you the next week, and it was this crazy thing. Now with the influx with so many other different types of media, whether it's Twitter and Facebook, whether it's, you know, the online packages like we're doing today, the TV, the radio, the podcast, everything. There are so many more opportunities, and guys are like, you know, I get out of sports, what am I going to really do? And they want to do something that's kind of related to football without having to go to practice every day, have to sit in a dark film room and watch film every day. This is kind of what they're finding at home. They love the game. They can be around the game, and they can talk about it.
And OC mentioned that broadcasting will be one aspect of his new role overseas. He also mentioned that even before he was going to retire with the Giants, a team actually offered him a deal yesterday to perhaps suit up and get out there.
Again, pass rushers are a premium in the league. You get what you get. You can't really afford to see a guy out there that can't really get off the edge or come around the corner. When it's third and anything, if you want that team off the field to put the ball back in your quarterback's hands, you need a guy either hurrying the quarterback, hitting the quarterback, or sacking the quarterback.
And that brings us to, obviously, the injury report with respect to the Giants. They'll be heading out to practice in a little bit. Full coverage here on Giants.com. Tom Coughlin spoke to the media earlier today, Howard. He mentioned that Weston Richburg will be sitting out of practice again today, nursing that knee injury. Victor Cruz also won't be going, still nursing that calf injury. However, he did say that Ruben Randall's making progress, as is Landon Collins. And for a player like Landon Collins, real crucial to get him back on the field considering they're banged up at that safety position.
Well, crucial to get him back on the field, but crucial mostly to get him back into the system. You know, he's a rookie. He's trying to learn the whole ideal of being a part of the NFL, being the speed of the game, understanding how quick these guys are going to come up on you, how fast they're going to be moving, understanding the formations, where they're going when you're watching the game. So it's not as crucial as people think because, oh, we got to get him back on the field, there are injuries. No, it's crucial for him to get indoctrinated into the game itself. He hasn't had that kind of opportunity yet, and it's important for him to see that. The game comes so much faster at you when you're in the NFL because all of a sudden you're not a guy who's a top player on your team, you know, hoping to go to the NFL. You're one of the guys who's in the NFL playing at the same time, and everybody's moving as fast or faster than you.
And everybody's looking to take your job and so forth. Yep. When the competition certainly keys up. Landon Collins spoke to the media actually yesterday, Howard, and one of the things he mentioned, because everybody was pressing him on, oh, you haven't been on the field, are you concerned? That he said, no, I'm taking a lot of the mental reps. Mm-hmm. From your perspective, can you absorb a lot from just simply staying on the sideline, watching other players, having the coach in your ear? Is that similar to perhaps being out there, or is there a distinct difference?
Well, with the new collective bargaining agreement, yes. That's what the league has become. But the reality of it is, and this is just an opinion of mine from, you know, playing in a different era, but the reality of it is you need to actually see, like, your mind remembers things. You remember a lot of things. But if you actually do something, it's kind of an imprint. It's kind of pressed in there. When you read it or you're seeing the plays and you're studying, oh, I'm getting mental reps. But when that guy actually moves just a half of a foot out of the place that you thought he was going to be because his words drawn on the paper, things start to change. When he moves over, what happens behind him? And that's what you have to look for. Unfortunately, the things on paper don't move. The film can help you out a lot, watching film, actually sitting in practice. But again, your eyes have to be focused on a lot of different things. And you can't, if you're standing in your spot on the field, you'll know what the view of the field is when you're standing there. But if you're standing off the field, if you're standing to the side, if you're standing behind the defense, you're not looking at the same angles that you're looking when you're in the game, and that's the big difference.
The dynamics of essentially what's taking place in front of you and behind you when you're on the field.
I explain to kids constantly that the game is very interesting. The guys that are playing are really smart at what they're doing. I'm not telling you that they're brilliant people or something, but at the game itself, they're brilliant. And what the brilliant thing is when you look down and then look up, everything could be changed, and you have to adjust on the fly. That's what makes it, you know, pretty incredible. It's almost like you hear a guy when he's got the bat in his hand, he's talking about the curveball or whatever, and you're trying to figure out what's coming at you. When you look down and you look up, like, there could be eight people moved by the time you're like, set, 19, and everybody's moving around. That's the kind of thing that happens. And it would be different if it was only the quarterback. It's every position. You know, the safeties, when they're standing back there, they're, like, trying to direct, you know, the corners, get the linebackers lined up, and all of a sudden there's a shift. check, check, this guy's moving here, and everybody starts to shift. And then all of a sudden, as you look over to tell this guy to come in, you look back, someone else is moving.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's
like a game of chess, essentially.
It's constantly moving, and it's hard to explain. It's hard for, like, you know, to explain to a fan what's really happening. They're like, oh, well, he should be able to. No, you can't. It's not you should just be able to. I really wish it was that easy. It's hard to do. It's hard to teach. It's hard to teach adults. It's hard to teach kids. It's hard to teach coaches how to explain it to people.
The intricacies of the game, essentially. And that's probably why when Steve Spagnuolo has been asked about the safety position, Howard, he says that's arguably the most important aspect of our defense. And it's basically what you're just alluding to, because they're seeing everything from a different perspective than the defensive linemen, the linebackers, and even the corners. I mean, they're the eyes and ears of essentially the entire defense.
They are. And think about this. If you're looking over and making an adjustment as a guy shifts over and they snap the ball and the guy on the outside starts to sprint and you know that you're covering that hash, you got to get back to your position from wherever you are on the field. You can't make a mistake, because if you do, you know, when Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, you know, Eli, Peyton, anybody, they're like, okay, he's out of position, let's throw it. And they go right over the top of you. So you have to be in position. You have to know how to do things. You have to be able to adjust as it's happening, sometimes predict what's happening. And that's where he's going to, you know, that's where he's going to get his little bit of his education. Hopefully he'll get into a game here in the preseason so we can see a little bit more of it, because now they're game planning. You game plan the third game. It kind of gets you into the schedule, gets you into the routine of what you're going to do during the year is when you start to game plan for teams. And they kind of game plan for the Jets. The Jets are game planning for the Giants, but it's the third game of the season. It helps players get into their routine. And he'll get into the routine, then he gets to go out in the field and execute.
You're simulating essentially what a typical Sunday or Monday is going to be during the NFL season.
No, you're simulating what the week's going to be. See, what happens is that on Monday you go over the game that you just played. It gets you a little workout in. You kind of watch the tape and it's gone. On Tuesday you take your day off. On Tuesday for the coaches, they're putting together, if they haven't already put together, the actual game plan that you're going to go through. They put together Wednesday, just the regular first, second, third down stuff. Then Thursday they put together first, second, third down, some red zone stuff. And then Friday is red zone, goal line. And then Saturday, you get a lot more special teams. You know, you do special teams every day, but Saturday is a bigger focus on special teams and knowing, all right, well, this guy's banged up. Lance is out. Okay, we got to get Neely in. If Neely's out, okay, Howard, you got to go in so everybody knows what they're doing. And it's part of the process. It's just learning what to do every time, because every week something changes.
More of a reason why this third preseason game, as you mentioned, is probably imperative for rookies more so than veterans who are getting their first taste of, like you said, okay, hey, this is how I got to go about my business during the course of a normal regular season week.
Well, this is big for the rookies in the sense of if you're a high draft pick and you're going to be on a team, it's okay, how are we going to start budgeting our time? You know, you got to be able to do that. You got to be able to departmentalize everything you're going to do. If it's a guy who's trying to make the team, now that guy has to really, really hone in, because he's only going to get a few plays. You're trying to get more plays out of the first O or the first D. You're trying to get more plays out of, like, let's say there's three receivers. You're trying to get that three receiver set in the game. So maybe that second tight end is not in as much. Maybe that fullback doesn't get to see as much time. So all those guys that you're trying to, quote, unquote, get more reps, to get them in more of a flow of the game, it starts to cut down on the reps of the guys who are trying to make it. So when you're trying to make it, you have to, like, okay, I got to flash on special teams. I got to make a play there. Hey, I'm going to be in third and long. I got to be, you know, excellent. I'll get a block down the field or something. So everything that you do after this point becomes urgent for you, because you got to find a way to make sure that they're still paying attention to you, still call your name when the last preseason game rolls around.
Trevin Wade and Orleans Darkwa, Corey Washington, those type of players, certainly the emphasis picks up as they enter this third preseason game. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We're going to open up the phone lines. You have a question, you have a comment about what's going on with the Giants, you want to reminisce and talk about OCU Mignore, certainly want to hear from you in terms of one of your highlights from watching him over the course of his Giants tenure. We start things off today with Tom in Parsippany. Tom, what's happening? Tommy there. Tom apparently is a man of very few words this afternoon, so we will try to get back to Tom. 201-939-4513, hashtag hashtag Giants Chat, excuse me, on Twitter. We'll also check out Twitter throughout the course of the program. I know a number of people who can't get to a phone certainly weighing in terms of their thought process on what's going on with respect to the New York Giants. But let's get back to what you were pointing out, Howard, in terms of the emphasis of this third preseason game and how it simulates what's going to happen during the course of a regular season week. Who in particular, you were saying that guys need to take advantage of their limited reps. Is there a player or two that you think really needs to perhaps elevate or make a statement this week to help himself moving forward as they continue to cut down these rosters?
Well, that's going to be a lot of guys. You know, you think from the offensive side, you think of guys like Washington, you know, the big receiver who kind of had his coming out party last year in the preseason, catching a lot of balls, catching touchdowns. It was awesome. Now he has to kind of make some bigger plays in the special teams to make sure that he's just not a quote-unquote, I don't want to say he's not a practice squad player, but he wants to get onto the field and be a part of the live 53-man roster. He needs to make some plays. Dorquay, he's doing a great job, but he needs to make more plays. Every opportunity you get, you got to make more plays. It's just guys like that. They're secondary guys, tons of them that are just sitting there. They're trying to get in. They're being squeezed by the fact that the safeties are hurt. They're being really squeezed by the fact that the safeties are hurt. So if you're a cornerback and you're not going to get in the game because you got Prince in there and you got a Camardi in there and you're trying to figure out, okay, how do I get another rep? Your special teams moments are going to be big in the game. You got to show. You got to do something. If you're a gunner running down, you got to be the first guy down. If you're a hold-up guy, your guy can't even get off the ball.
And can't breathe.
But that's what you have to figure out. Those are the things that are hard to explain to guys and hard for, you know, from a guy on the outside looking in. I played special teams my entire career. I enjoyed playing special teams my entire career. They used to try to get me off of the teams, and I'm like – I'm like, why? I'm like, I'm having fun. I'm like, if there's someone that can do it, but well, you need to rest. I'm like, I'm not tired. I'm like, let somebody, let him rest. I mean, well, I'll rest when I'm retired. They're like, I don't understand. Why do you keep it? Like, because I'm playing a game. I'm having fun. So guys don't, everybody doesn't have that mentality. So you're trying to instill that mentality into them. You know, God rest his soul. Coach Dick Raybine used to say, you know, we'd have practice, and he would go, yep, well, this didn't work out or that didn't work out. And one of the players would go, it wasn't me. One of the players would say, well, I had a bad day today. And coach would look at him and goes, you had a bad day today. He goes, I got a buddy. I'm like, man, we're like, okay, here we go again. He's got a buddy. He goes, he never has a bad day. He never had a bad day at work. I'm like, how could you never have a bad day at work? Now, I'm chiming in because I'm thinking, like, okay, coach, you're being smart, Alec. He goes, really? He never had a bad day at work. I'm like, who do you know who never had a bad day at work? He goes, my buddy's a brain surgeon. And I was like, He goes, if you think about it, he says, there's probably someone in your life that never had a bad day. And I thought about it. My uncle never had a bad day at work. He was a demolitions expert.
There you go.
you don't want to have a bad day when you got a fuse in your hand. Yeah. So, like, it's
got to be meticulous.
Yeah, but
be
it's
careful.
Something about it that means a lot more to people is that you don't have bad days. And I thought that was pretty cool.
You mentioned that obviously you thrived on special teams and players need to buy in. Does it require a specific mindset, Howard, from any player? Do you have to want to do it like you said? Because you, the way you were talking about it, you could feel the passion. It was something you enjoyed. But do you have to have that mindset?
You got to want to play football. You know, I listen to a lot of people and a lot of the criticisms of how bad or how tough or how rough or how, you know, everything in the game is. Danger, danger, Will Robinson, danger. I get the whole thing. But, you know, there's a certain level of commitment you make to do what you're doing in life. If you want to be a brain surgeon, there's a huge commitment and a huge sacrifices you have to make to be that person. If you want to be an Olympic swimmer or an Olympic track person, you make sacrifices in your life to be who you're going to be. If you want to be a football player, you have to make sacrifices. You have to make commitments. You have to, you know, be willing to go to a place that other people won't go in order to be who you want to be on the field. And a lot of guys are just like, you know, they were stars. To take off, to hang the star up, to put the helmet on and just go play, it's a big jump.
Especially when you, like you said, you were the guy in college. Yep. You were a starter, whether it be on offense or defense. No, now all of a sudden.
Not a starter, a star. Like, yeah. I came from Alabama. Only thing they let me play was, you know, you could be on kickoff return. I'm like, okay, what do I got to do on kickoff return? Stop him from making a tackle. Oh, easy. You're like, oh, that dude's moving fast.
And then you realize, hey, it ain't that easy. Yeah.
Let's figure this out. So it became like a little game trying to block the guy, and it was really fun. And then you get to the pros, you know, it's like, well, you played on kickoff return when you're like, yeah. They're like, well, you're on kickoff return. I'm like, okay. Well, you're also on kickoff. I'm like, okay. Well, you're on punt. Okay. You're on punt return. Okay. You know, like this, you just whatever it is, you're on it. I'm here
for
you.
You
know, I got it, coach. I'll do it. Can you show me what you want me to do first?
And just then,
like, show me what to do, then I'll do it. But that's a mentality. That's a want to, a desire. That's a something that it's not just, you know, any team. It's any player who comes into the league. You can't just show up. You don't want to just have a jersey because those days are over with. You don't get to be on the team and get to ride a team bus and go to the pep rally. This is big boy football. You got to want to play.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's head back to the phone lines. Tom is in Parsippany again. Tom, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Can you hear me now?
We hear you loud and clear, Tom. How you doing?
All right, great. How's it going today, guys? First off, I wanted to say it's really great to have Howard in the rotation here. I was a big fan when he was playing, and then I'm becoming a bigger fan now that he's on the show.
Thanks.
So what do you have for us, Tom?
I was encouraged on Saturday when I saw a little bit of I formation coming out of the backfield, and I was just wanted to throw this out there. I think it would be a great way to get around not having a blocking tight end that can also catch. You could have that sort of a mystery presented to the defense if you had, like, Shane Vereen and Heinoski in there because they can both run, they can both catch. So I'm really hoping that we can see something like that out there on the field, and I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, the I formation is famous. That's usually for everybody who doesn't know. It's when the running back stands behind the fullback and they're both standing behind the quarterback. It's usually more popular with the inside runs between the tackles or inside the tight end, and it works very well. But what happens is that the teams start to overload and squeeze down on the inside, which forces you still to need that tight end to make his block and hold his guy out. The tight end in the game or a guy that's big enough to hold that edge, it changes the dynamic of an offense from a running and passing perspective. Once that guy can, all of a sudden, if he can block a defensive end or can hold up a defensive end or can block an outside linebacker, it really puts stress on the defense because the defense have to, you know, commit extra players to that side to protect against that guy.
And, Tom, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. And that's one of the reasons why when you focus on specifically Larry Dinnell, you know, we saw what he did last season, Howard, in terms of presenting that receiving threat. But blocking is another aspect because you want him to be an all-around tight end so that the defense is on its toes when he's in the game.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting there. He's getting better. He's getting stronger. It's more about physical strength, I think, and being able to get your body down to do it and understanding leverage. He's getting there. He definitely wants to get better at it. He's getting there. But if you're catching 65, 70 passes in a season, that's a big part of your game as well. So he has to, you know, find a balance between the two. You have guys like Fells that are willing to get down and dirty and get it done. It's just that where it comes into question, where it's going to come into, like, well, what do we really need him to do when it's third and one, when it's first and goal on the one? That's kind of when you need that guy to be able to get in there and
short yardage.
And dig in. I need you to dig in for one play. It might happen three times in a game. It might happen five times in a game. But I need you to dig in for that one play. And that's where you got it. I mean, that's what the team needs. Remember, Barry Sanders was the all-time leading rusher in the league, but he played in what they called back then the run-and-shoot offense. If he'd have had a tight end, if they'd have just been able to block for him, he would have outrushed everybody by twice as much. He was that good. But usually he was dodging the first guy in the backfield because there was nobody blocking that edge guy that well and trying to get upfield, making
Singing
a guy
and
miss.
Zagging yep. about that he did. Yep. The caller brought up the I formation, not to get crazy technical here, but another formation that we've seen a lot, and it's a copycat league. You know, teams use two tight ends. So this way, one guy blocks, and then you allow the other guy to go out and receive. Is that element something that you think is suitable perhaps for the Giants, and will it perhaps continually catch on throughout the NFL?
Well, there's a formation. There's several formations. The simplest one to go through is when you have the two tight ends and the one back in the backfield. Essentially, the fullback becomes one of the tight ends, or a guy comes in and substitutes for the fullback. and comes in. They have them on both sides in a balanced look. In theory, when you do that, that means that they can run to either side, and it balances out the defense. If the tight end rolls over into a flood formation where you have two guys on the same side, then they know that's a power side, and it gives them a little extra blocking. You have to overload that side to compensate for it, which leaves a, you know, one-on-ones on the backside with a receiver. So it's different things, just simple things like that, that can make a difference. You know, the two tight ends, the one guy can come in motion and motion into the fullback position and lead the block. So there are a lot of different things that you can do when you have the two guys, if the guy can you know, be a suitable blocker.
Execute and so forth. Mm-hmm. And that's why versatility is so important in terms of all positions in the NFL. Let's head back to the phone lines. We check in with Len in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Very
doing well,
good.
Len.
How are you doing?
Good, good. Howard, good to see you back in studio.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, listen, thank you to OC also. You know, two Super Bowl rings. That's the kind of thing you – I mean, you never forget a player like that. And, you know, just the one memory that sticks with me, the Hall of Famer Walter Jones from up in Seattle. Mm-hmm. We went up there to play the Seahawks one time, and I think OC had four sacks coming over Jones' side. And that's, I think that's one of the that's one of the things about OC that will stick in my mind. But, you know, you can't hide the two Super Bowls.
No.
Great play. Terrific player. And sounds like he's landing on his feet, and I hope things hope things work out for the guy.
I think he's doing better than landing.
Hey, listen, nothing, you know, nothing like winning a game. That was good the other night. I'd rather win. I don't care if it's preseason or not. I want to win games. I feel better the next day, Howard, after a win.
I'm sure
and,
you do.
And now that we're playing the Jets this weekend, you know, I don't care what we play the Jets in, checkers, anything, football, win the game. Nothing better than beating the Jets. And I'd like to see us do that on Saturday night.
Well, you want that Snoopy trophy, Len. I know that's what you're really dreaming
about.
Yeah,
I forgot about the Snoopy trophy. Yeah, I want the Snoopy trophy.
There you
but,
go.
I just want to be able to beat the Jets. You know, I don't care if it's preseason or not. Let's win that game. Listen, a couple of things I'd like your comments on, both, you know, Lance and Howard. Three players I'm looking at who I really, really want to see do well, because I think the fortunes of the Giants going into this season are really going to be dependent. Now, this may not be breaking news, because we've talked about all of this before, but I think Jeff Schwartz is a key part of this whole thing. I mean, Jeff's got to come through for us. He's got to be that right guard. I'm counting on Schwartz. I think with Newhouse at tackle and Schwartz at guard, I can live with that. I can live with that. I don't want to see it long term, you know, with Newhouse out there. But look, he's doing what we're asking him to do. He's, you know, he's filling in here. But I think he'll be a better player with Schwartz at guard. Anybody else at right guard on our roster right now with Newhouse at right tackle, I'm very uncomfortable. So I'm really rooting for Jeff Schwartz to come through.
Well, that's why the last game, Len, real quickly, the last game, it was important for him to get some reps, which he did. And he also played, remember, right tackle the last game as well. They were moving him around with respect to that.
Yeah, they did. They're trying to find the right combination over there on that right side. Schwartz is going to be – basically, Len, they have four of their five players. They're looking for their fifth player.
Yes, yeah, and I just, you know, Schwartz has got to get in there. He's got to step forward. And, you know, I know we experimented a little bit. First two games you experiment, and, you know, he's out there at right tackle a little bit. But, you know, we gave him the big money last year, coming off a year when he played pretty well at right guard for Kansas City. So, I mean, play the guy at right guard. Come on, let's get five guys out there Saturday night and play him for a half together.
You got to be a little careful with that. You know, everybody keeps talking about getting Schwartz in the game and are excited about it. Think about this. Schwartz basically came off a dislocated ankle. So what they're doing is they're putting him in a couple spots, but putting him in and then bringing him out of the game and asking him, how do you feel? How big is that ankle right now? Is that
how's
okay?
It up? Yeah.
Is it looking good?
Howard, I hope he's feeling good, because I think that's a key part of our success.
I think it
it's
will
gonna
be.
The right side. It's got to be the right side of that line, and I think Jeff's the best guy we got, and we hope we can get him on the field.
I think he'll be good.
Let me talk a little bit about a guy on the defensive side. Maybe he's having a little trouble adjusting to the 4-3 from the 3-4 that he played with the Jets, but I want to see Kenrick Ellis assert himself and take over that tackle position in that 4-3 starting Saturday night. I mean, this is a big, big man. And I think he's going to be an important player for the Giants. I just want him on that first unit as a defensive tackle. I think he's key. I think he can help us not get pushed around a little bit along that defensive line. I don't want to say he's struggling. It seems to me that I don't even know if trouble is the right word, but the adjustment is coming a little more slowly to the 4-3 than I thought it would. You guys have any comments on that?
Well, I think you have to think about this when you're thinking about Kenrick Ellis. Hopefully he'll, first off, make the team. You got to remember that when you bring a guy in, he's competing with other guys, with Jenkins, Kuhn, Bromley, Hankins. These guys all are on the field. They don't want to give up their spots. They're going to work just as hard. Coming in from a 3-4 to a 4-3 goes from basically taking on a guy playing two gaps to playing one gap and getting upfield. So if he's going to use his speed and size to shoot through the gap and get upfield, holding one of those five positions up front, he's got to get it done. I mean he seems like he's doing okay, but making the big play, I don't know if they've done that yet. It'll be interesting to see how it all works out.
Okay, see, I think the size element with Ellis is just, you know, tying up a blocker or two at that line, let Hankins do his thing, let the linebackers make some tackles, etc. I think we need a guy at that other defensive tackle position that's really going to hold that line of scrimmage. And this is a, geez, he's a big guy. You guys see him more than I do.
Yeah.
You see him every day.
Hey, listen,
that's a big man.
Well, listen, think of it this way, Lynn. If he just holds his spot on the line, you would think that was good enough, but it creates holes. You have to get across the line. You have to play on the other side of the ball when you're playing. That's what the 4-3 is meant to do, to play on the other side of the ball. The 3-4 is kind of that we're going to hold our position and the linebackers are going to make the plays. Every guy up front has to make a play. He's not tying guys up. He's actually making a play himself.
I want to see one of the safeties that are coming back this week assert themselves a little bit. We need somebody back there to assert themselves. And hopefully it's Collins, but I want to see Cooper Taylor. I want to see Burhey. You know, somebody, you know, solidify your position as a starter with the Giants starting this weekend. One of those three guys. Time to make a move.
Well, that's essentially the goal.
Let's beat the Jets, guys.
You got it, Len, and appreciate the phone call. And that's why it's so important to get Cooper Taylor and Nat Burhey, obviously, back on the field. I basically have said over the last few days, Howard, getting Nat Burhey on the field is essentially like getting a new safety because he's been out for so long.
I think we said this yesterday. We had a long conversation. The safety position is two different guys. You got a free and a strong. A lot of people don't recognize that. The strong safety is a guy who comes up, makes the plays, plays against the tight end, plays in the run, gets his nose a little bloodied every once in a while. And then you have that free safety. They got to kind of plays in the back who kind of is the conductor who's getting everybody in place. He's never letting anybody get behind him. He's getting the other safety back in position and stuff. And the team is looking for that conductor to get things going back there, the guy to lead the orchestra of that defense. And it's going to be a battle. And right now you see them making tackles, and everybody's like, well, that's good. They're always on the tackle. That's great. But when you really understand it, you'll be knocking balls down. And, you know, pass defenses are very important. If you're the safety and you're tackling a guy, you're tackling him for a first down. So you want to break up some balls. And I think that's where they're headed. I think that's what Spags is going to do for this team.
Become opportunistic. You think about what Stevie Brown did a few seasons ago that year where he always had the knack to not just, like you said, make the tackle, Howard, but get his hand in the passing lane or intercept it.
Well, Stevie Brown was a unique person getting all those interceptions. He had an extremely good nose for the ball. I think, you know, right now when you're learning this defense, you got to be able to get to your spot and then be able to knock the ball down.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Shakes is in Baltimore. Shakes, what's happening?
What's going on, Lance?
Doing well, Shakes. How's everything with you?
I'm good. Nice talking to you finally, Howard.
Hey, good talk to you, Shakes, my man. How are we doing today? What can we help you with?
I'm good. Real quick, when I began watching football, especially the Giants, it was 1990, you were already on the team. Mm-hmm. So you are like the first tight end I know.
That's funny.
So, and I appreciate you for all the years you played for the Giants.
Oh, thank you very much. That's really
now,
nice.
Shakes, don't forget, he contributed to special teams as well, which we were talking about earlier. So, you know, the credit doesn't just go to the tight ends. How about the special teams play as well?
You do everything you can, baby.
There we go.
No doubt. It's well known on this show that last year I was real high on getting a tight end. And my thing is, with the new league, the tight end is more like a wide receiver now. They are slot guys. And I'm more traditional. I like the guys that can block as well, because to me, I feel like a tight end should be half offensive lineman, half receiver. So, and I think that's what you were. Mm-hmm. Now, being that said, on this team, I'm looking at Adrian Robinson and I'm looking at Jerome Cunningham. Which one do you think is a better blocker, and which one do you think will be on this 53-man roster? Howard, that's towards Howard.
Wow, that's a great question. But think of this. This is how I look at it. I mean, I see Gronkowski. I see Jason Witten. That's it. See how quickly I stopped? Yeah. You don't really get to see that anymore. I think Robinson has the physical tools to do it. He's got to get out of his own way mentally maybe to do it, but he has the physical tools to do it. I think Cunningham's a fighter, a scrappy guy, but if he's playing against a guy that's 260 and up, it's a tough call when you're that size to block a defensive end if it's a guy out there over 260, 270 coming off the edge, if they have you kind of basically in the backfield trying to, you know, help protect your $100 million quarterback. But you don't want somebody back there who's not going to be able to at least – get in the guy's way and scare him a little bit. I'll cut you, stop, you know, something. So I think Robinson has the lead in that aspect. Where Cunningham may have the lead is the speed of play. And what I mean by that, he understands the offense really quickly. He's hustling. He's playing on great – he's, you know, making an effort on teams. He's doing everything he can to be a player because he knows he's fighting an uphill battle. So, again, Robinson has the lead, a drafted player. And Cunningham is going to give everything he has to try to make it.
Okay, thanks for the answer. And real quick, shout-outs to O.C. Umenura for everything and everything he's done in his career for the Giants and everything that he's going to do in the future as far as going into London and filling those guys in on the NFL and everything. That's huge, man. So shout-outs to him, man, and everything.
Appreciate the
phone
call.
Thanks for taking my call, y'all.
You got it. Thanks so much for chiming in. And you mentioned Adrian Robinson, Howard. The one thing that also stands out to me about this offseason, this training camp, this is the first time that he's actually been healthy continually for a stretch of weeks. I mean, he's battled his fair share of injuries, too, during his tenure here.
I think he did during the seasons. I think during the season he'd get a little banged up. I don't think he's been injured in the preseason. I think the preseason has been more him, you know, trying to adjust to whatever is being called. He's gotten two offenses. He's had to learn why he was here. Right when he got settled into one, the McAdoo comes in. It's just different. So, you know, some guys can pick it up quickly. Like I said, the whole – eyes up, eyes down, you know, eyes down, eyes up. And what do you see? You know, how's that coming to you? How quickly is that coming to you? That's tough. Like I said, everybody can't do it. You know, when they tell you you're a project, you have this ability, we like you, it all depends if you can pick up the game. The game is very important for you to be able to pick it up.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We have Bob on the line. He apparently is from the land of the unknown. Bob, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, how you doing? Howard, how you doing, guys?
Doing well,
very
Bob.
Good, very good.
How's everything with you?
All right, good. Listen, first is I got to make a little statement, and it's really a credit to you, Lance, and also Paulie. When that famous character Anne had called in and spewed out her stinky agenda, and you guys handled yourselves like gentlemen. Yeah, Paulie was silent, and Lance, you did the outstanding thing, which was to defend your co-host, And then, of course, I do want to say this. I hope she is banned forever from
she is banned forever. Bob, I made that bold statement on this program. Howard wasn't here, so he may be playing catch-up. Yeah. But we get some feisty ones, as you well know, Howard. Bob,
she has an agenda, Lance. She has an agenda, and she thinks she's superior and everything else. And so, anyway, I'm glad you did that. You really conducted yourself.
I appreciate the kind words. I appreciate you listening and watching each and every day, Bob. Thanks so much. So what else do you have for us today?
Okay, now here's a thing I got for Howard. As a former player, it seems like there's always somebody that comes up, especially with the Giants. It seems mostly with wide receivers that they become the instant Hall of Famer, for the summer, with making some catches and everything else, and everybody thinks they're great. But then you see some of these kids come in and they think they're, hey, I'm a receiver. I don't have to play or excel on special teams. And so I wonder from your perspective, how do you feel when you see these guys cop that attitude that, hey, I'm sort of above special teams. I'm a receiver. And the perfect example to me this year is Washington and Davis. Washington, he had a good year last year. He made 4 touchdowns and some catches. But he seems to have a different perspective of how to play or why you should play special teams. And you see a kid like Davis, who apparently, from what I understand, never actually played special teams in college. They just never asked him to play special teams. And here he comes in and he catches everything in camp. And he has what apparently is just the perfect attitude to do whatever the Giants ask them of. So I'd just love to see your perspective as a former player. How do the established players feel when these kids cop this attitude about special teams? And do you guys ever set them aside and tell them how to smell the coffee?
It's pretty funny. No, you don't really tell them how to play or what to do or anything like that, because usually if you have a guy that everyone likes and then that's just endearing, you try to help him along and everything. But most of the time, you're just there working, trying to get your job done. As far as Robinson and Parker and all these different guys who are trying to Washington and all these guys are trying to make it. Think of this: when you're on a college team, there may be 100 players on the team. With 100 players, you may get a couple starters here and there playing specials. Because you got 100 players on the team, 100 players that are quote-unquote active on the team like they do in the NFL. You only have 53, and out of that 53, only 46 dress. So when you're playing teams in college, you're playing because, hey, look, I get to get on the field. When you're playing teams in the NFL, you're playing because, hey, I'm trying to make the team. Guys who come in who've never played special teams, who would have no idea of the speed of what they need to run down and how brave you have to be to do that. It's hard to just say, okay, come in and do it. They don't know. They don't have any idea of how to run down the field full speed, break down, make a tackle, how to run down the field full speed, which just is gone now. It's not anymore, but bust a wedge and do these different things. It's an actual talent that
it's a science, essentially.
Yeah, you have to learn it. Like they come in and start telling you about it, and in your mind you're like, yeah, how hard could it be to run down the field? I guess what am I going to do? I'm fast. I can get by a guy. And all of a sudden, you're running. And you're like, ooh, he's running over there. And then you get hit. And coach is like, hey, look, don't be on anybody's highlight tape. So that's kind of what these guys are going through. It's not that they don't want to play. It's just they got to learn how to play. And it's hard to do. It's not easy.
Hey, Bob, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. And that gets back to what you were saying earlier. When you're a star, and let's say even you're an offensive player, Howard, you're not going out there and you're not tackling on a daily basis because that's not part of who you are. For example, Jeremy Davis, he gets drafted by the Giants. You're on the back end of the depth chart. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, you're not just necessarily going to be expected to go out there and catch passes. You got to tackle.
And if you're a star receiver or a pretty good receiver and you're in college, your stint on special teams might be, hey, look, I can return punts. That'll be your whole thing. They're not gonna let you cover. We got like 27 DBs, 52 linebackers. We got 26 guys. We got enough guys that can cover. Go sit down and go learn what to do on the next play. We need to know if you can get open. And that's kind of the mentality of the coaches. You actually have to get engaged in the game somehow in order to know how to do this stuff. And if you're not, you got to learn when you get here. And with the limited reps of live drills, it's kind of hard to learn how to cover a guy at full speed when you're not running full speed in practice. And all
that's
of a sudden, when the preseason, when lights come on, referees, hey, how you doing? It's good to see you. Oh, hey, I remember you from what you call it. That's great. Set up. Boom, boom, boom.
And then all of a sudden, the blink of an eye, the guy's.
Where'd that guy go? Yeah, they're like, he's like, oh, that's my guy. Okay, you're getting cut. Now you're out the window. You're sitting on the bus going home.
What about the gunner position, though? Because we do see a lot of wide receivers. The first time they try to test them out there, mm-hmm. the Corey Washingtons, the Jeremy Davis. Is it easy to transition, even if you haven't tackled much in college, to that position?
The gunner position is different because at that point, you're trying to get open. And in theory, a guy standing out there with his hands up, and it's almost like a guy's playing press coverage on him, and he's trying to get down the field. It's easy when it's one-on-one, it's you and one guy. But when they put that other guy and they box you in, you got to fight your way. You got to understand leverage and how to really use the field to get by the guys to get, you know, so you can get downfield. If you don't understand any of that and they put you out there, you're going to make someone's highlight tape. You're going to be the guy that they're letting you up, and another guy knocks you down. They let you up. The other guy knocks you down. He's like, okay, get up. One more time. Please let us hit you once more. But the play's over. Just get up. Come on. So they're happy that you're out there for the first time. The spots that are easier for guys to play is the safety spots on the kickoff. That means those guys are rolling back and they're the last line of defense. If they're one of the guys that have to be the first one down, you got to navigate through all these guys trying to block you. You got to know who's trying to block you, because you can go by a guy like, "Whoo, I'm putting a move on you. Dude, where is Lance?" Boom, this guy in front of them, like, "Well, why is he blocking? I thought Lance was blocking." You have to know all these things. If not, you're on a highlight tape.
Therefore, so you're saying the back end is the most comfortable because you're not weaving in and
out of
traffic.
Yeah, because you're the guy that kind of makes sure they don't run down the field and score the touchdown.
It's a tough transition, as you just laid out.
It's crazy.
It could be a rude awakening.
Oh, it could be.
On many different fronts.
To love to play guys that didn't know what they were doing. New crop of rookies. This is going to be
fun. Must have had a few video laughs
I can imagine
after a preseason game.
We used to have D-cleaters, guys running down the field, flying. You hit them. And you're not hitting them with a cheap shot. You're just hitting them. And you can hit them on the shoulder, and they topple. Like you threw them out of a moving car. They're moving so fast. It was like funny.
The speed of the game.
Oh, yeah. It was
20
great.
Times different than what it was in college. Let's head back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513. Jason is on the lines. Jason, what's happening?
What's up, boys?
Hey, how we doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Great.
I'd like to talk about Eli Manning.
Okay.
Sure. What do you got?
I think he's going to be an MVP quarterback this year.
I think if, and I will say if, everyone's healthy, it is going to be very hard to put the Giants behind any fences, because there are 70 catches per guy on the field right now, maybe 80. You know, Odell Beckham might get 80 catches or better. You know, you know, Victor Cruz is potentially 80 catches or better. You know, Reuben Randle.
He's veterans right there.
Reuben Randle's in a contract here, so he's going to want his 70 to 80 catches. And you know that everybody's been talking about Donald and Larry Donnell and what he's going to do and how he's going to do. He had 63 catches last year, so that's another 60 to 70 catches. Then you got Vereen, Jennings, and Williams, who's starting to catch the ball. So you have three running backs that might catch 60 to 70 passes. And who knows who's going to be that fourth receiver. He's going to want 30 or 40 passes. Eli could be the MVP. They could be throwing the ball all over the field this year.
All right.
I agree with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What anything else, Jason?
No, that's about it.
Okay.
All right, thanks
certainly
a lot.
Certainly appreciate the phone call. And remember, Eli's coming off a career year, essentially, too, Howard. I mean, his numbers were really jumping off the page last season in comparison to what happened in 2013, and that was just the first year of this offense.
I agree.
A little bit more comfortable.
I agree, but also, Lance, think about this. Last year they had three offensive linemen they could depend on that they thought were kind of in their spots. You have some guys out of position. You have a whole lot of different
mixing
things.
But you had
three guys. This year they have four guys. They're only missing the one guy. That one guy can get help from a tight end block. That one guy can get help from the back chipping out of the backfield. They have enough guys to block now. With time and healthy, everybody healthy, you got to have at least three of the four receivers healthy. If you have three of those guys healthy, it's going to be kind of hard to cover all those guys. It's a Drew Brees in New Orleans kind of moment. You got so many different guys that are available to you to throw the ball. It's like guys are going to be coming back to the huddles like, okay, is it my turn yet? They're like, okay, ticket time. Let's take a ticket and see who's going to be out there.
Remember, I'm still on the team, by the way. You know, I'm on the left side, Eli. You know, throw me the ball.
It's going to be a lot like, you know, I think of Drew Brees. I think of Aaron Rodgers in those situations where they have so many options to throw to. When you have that many options, it just looks good.
Well, I thought you brought up a great point because everybody focuses on the offensive personnel, Howard, and, okay, Eli's got targets. But what you just pointed is, hey, if everybody's healthy, that means that now some guys may have to sacrifice a little and get down and dirty and block. So you have those options because let's say you take Vereen out of the play and he chips. Hey, Eli can still throw to three wide receivers and maybe a tight end.
Yeah, that's true. You got to think about if the Giants played the Jets today and everybody was healthy on both sides, the Jets will be coming at them with a very good pass rush. As they're coming at them with a very good pass rush, you got Revis out there, Revis Howland, but you got three receivers that Revis could possibly have to cover. You have a tight end coming out of the backfield that someone has to cover. You got a running back that someone has to cover. You got too many guys to cover. And even though they may have a great secondary, they don't have four or five quality guys playing at the exact same time. And that's what, you know, you'll see guys like Seattle. You saw how they were like, hey, man, this kid can play. That's really good. They're saying that because it's hard to cover these guys.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. He's Howard Cross. I'm Lance Meadow. Let's try to squeeze in a few more phone calls before we wrap up the show. Christopher is in New Jersey. Christopher, what's happening? Christopher, are you there? Okay, Christopher, very quiet, not very well spoken today. Let's go to Mike in California. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Great to be on the show.
Good to have
Lance
you, Mike.
And, Mr. Cross, respect. So,
thank you.
Got two different questions for you. First one is Colin Jenkins. So, you know, to me, Colin's been a tackle pretty much his whole career and, you know, was a pretty good one. I know he had the injury last year that held him back a bit, but supposedly he's healthy again. And, you know, I really, with the kind of wealth that we have at defensive ends, I mean, we got Robert Ayers, George Selvey, Nemontre Moore, Kerry Wynn, Oladigizua, they're all trying to get snaps. I'm really confused why Colin's playing out at defensive end, and if he's back healthy, you know, it seems like, you know, and he should be starting ahead of Marcus Kuhn. So, you know, what's can you guys explain why they're using Colin out of DE?
I think Colin's just playing in a lot of different spots because he can bring some pressure not just in the pass game but in the run game too. I think when you have some bigger guys or bigger tackles out on the edges trying to expose that edge in the running game, I think he's a good match for those guys. He can bring pressure up the middle as a pass rusher, and he can come off the edge. He has enough speed to do that. I think he's kind of playing the role of, hey, look, I want to play every spot on the line I possibly can play. I want to be invaluable to the team and not be stuck in a position where you could say, hey, this guy's a little younger than you. Why don't we put him in? So I think every time he moves to another position and bounces around, it makes him more valuable to the team.
And, Mike, it also goes back to what Howard and I were talking about earlier with respect to OC, the NASCAR package. You know, when you have guys that you can move around, Colin Jenkins has versatility. He can play inside. He can play outside. That goes back to his days with the Eagles. Mm-hmm. It goes back to his days with the Packers. Oladigizua also is a player they're trying to get him to have a knack to get to the quarterback. He was utilized at UCLA inside and outside. So the more players that Spags has had at his disposal who could be moved around, he can get four defensive ends, essentially, Howard, on the field at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, and what you have to understand also is that they're scouting players. They're scouting offensive linemen, and they're looking for guys who have tendencies. And you may be better against a certain type of player than another guy is. You may have this big, long-armed guy that likes to stand back and do something. He may be able to get inside that guy and lift him up and move him back. He may be a slow-footed guy that he can get around. Maybe a guy late with his hands that he's better at certain things than other guys are. You're constantly looking for the right matchup. I remember playing against the Eagles back in the day, and Reggie White would go up and down the line until he found the guy that he could.
Favorable matchup.
Okay. Hey, look, Bart Oates was like, man, please don't let him come in here. It was awesome. It was awesome to see a guy that talented move around from position to position to find his spot.
Mike, appreciate it. What else you got?
Has he been in a tackle? Because I haven't seen him. And I do want to hit you with this.
Yeah, he was in a tackle. He was in a tackle in both games.
Oh, okay. So then my other question is just about middle linebacker backup. Because, you know, with John having a knee problem, you know, they've kind of defaulted to Jamil McLean. And, you know, I'm a McClain fan. I think he's a quality player, quality individual. Happy to have him on the team. I also think he's a much better strong-sided linebacker than he is a middle linebacker. And I haven't seen him really have the kind of impacts. I mean, I don't see it in the stat numbers with number of tackles. I don't see it with the impact on the field where he's really, you know, I didn't see it last season either, where he's, like, making a huge impact there at middle linebacker. So, you know, I recognize Unionga has had limited snaps and it's been kind of against the twos, but the guy's, you know, first or second on the team in tackle with his limited time, and he seems like, you know, we might really have something with the guy. So I guess the other question I have is, given what we saw from Jamil a significant portion of last year at the middle linebacker, like, what do you think about Unionga getting a little more time and maybe getting in there with the ones?
I think, you know, Beeson has his eye on Unga. Unga is a very active, very fast, very aggressive player. You see him, and I like to say, when you're looking at the camera shot at the end of a play, you see Unga getting out of the pile or coming up out of the pile a lot. When the ball's thrown sometimes, he may not be covering that guy, but he's in the passing lane. That makes a kid valuable. I think he probably had a hip or something coming out, and that's probably why he didn't go higher in the draft. But I think the Giants, you know, they evaluated him. If he can stay healthy, he might be the starting linebacker before the end of the season.
Yeah, but you don't think he's ready yet?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just watching. This is early, watching the kid play, watching him make plays. I'm not in every meeting. I don't know all the assignments. I can, you know, I don't sit here. I don't do what, you know, I see guys and pundits constantly, they were former players, saying what a guy should have done. You can speculate what he should have done. Unless you're sitting in the meeting, you really don't know what they're supposed to do. So, you know, what I do see is him coming out of tackles and coming out of the pile. I do see him in passing lanes. Maybe he's supposed to be covering the guy he's knocking the ball down from, but I see him very active on the field.
Hey, thanks for your time, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it, Mike. Absolutely. Thanks for making the phone call. Appreciate it. Tom Coughlin has spoken highly of Unga, and he's been very active during the preseason. You also alluded to, Howard, the fact that, yes, he was banged up during college. He actually wound up missing a few years because of a lingering injury. So that obviously impacts whether or not teams want to take a chance on a player.
Well, you know, it's really hard to draft a guy and not know how long you're going to have him for, or you know, how bad this injury is or where it's going to develop. You know, you think back to Phillips from Miami. He was a great safety. Looked like he was could be a perennial, you know, Pro Bowler every year. And then he had the knee injury. All of a sudden, like, okay, how bad is the knee? And it just was progressively worse. It never got better. You think back to guys like trying to think of someone from last year. It's kind of the same thing. Smith had the bad knee. He left the Giants. How could the Giants let Smith go? He's a great receiver, the best third down receiver ever. All of a sudden, he goes from being the greatest to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Never really recovered. And it's tough. Hakeem Nicks came into the league with, oh, he has turf toe. Like, well, how bad is it? You find out over time. And if, when you have a little – I tell people this all the time. Like, if you have an injury in your body – that injury does not get better over time. It may be mended, it may be strong, but you know, every year you get older, that break gets a little harder to strengthen at the end of the year. And it just we're human. We don't have we expire like everything else do, and it is just part of it. Nothing's forever.
The pounding of it.
It just
builds up. Not,
like, my biggest flaw, playing basketball. I played basketball all the time. Like, I played basketball, like, you know, off season, we'd play 60 games a year sometimes. And it was like, later in my career, as I was starting to wind down and get out, I was thinking, like, man, my knee hurts like crazy. Like, well, I had a knee injury. Like, how bad could that be? And it really wasn't the knee injury. It was not letting go of basketball, not letting go of the pounding on the knees, not letting go of the court. Because I thought that I'd play basketball forever. I remember Sims and LT and everybody. Dude, get some golf clubs. I'm like, golf clubs? I'm never going to play golf, man. Are you crazy? Now I play golf all the time. But if you would ask me 20 years ago, would I be playing golf? I'd
be like, you'd be running up and down the court.
Hoops, yeah. Maybe. I'll be playing
fast break drills.
Yeah, that's
layups,
all I'm
going to
do. I'm dunking. I'm jumping like crazy. You gotta dial it back a little bit. But it's only dial it back in things that are going to hurt you. Once you get something hurt, understand how to take care of it, how to get better at it.
Let's close out the program with one more phone call. John is in New York. John, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Howard. How you doing?
Very good. Very
good. Doing well, John. How's everything with you?
Good. I'm just trying to make it short so you guys can wrap it up. But I want to give a shout-out to OC. He's had a great career, two rings with the Giants. So glad to see him retire as a Giant. And I want to make one point. I kind of get frustrated when people say that we're wasting draft picks. Say we get a third-round guy and he's not up to potential. And they say, oh, we waste a third-round pick, then we have to put him on the roster. I don't agree with that. So I'll let you talk about that, and thanks for the call.
Wow. All right, John, appreciate the phone call.
I don't know wasting picks. I don't know Coach Coughlin and Jerry's philosophy, and I speak to them all the time, but I don't have a philosophy on, like, why a guy makes the team, why a guy doesn't make the team. You know, as much as I've played for the whole career and helped coaching different things, not here but abroad in colleges and even peewee sports and stuff, I have no authority on who should make the team, who shouldn't make the team. I'm not in the day-to-day practices. I'm not in the meetings. I don't know how well they're grasping the information that's being put in front of them. And I don't know anything about potential or the things that I consider bad things in football. I think every player is a player. You learn to play early. You hone in on your skills, and then you let your body grow into the person you need to be because you're using your skills and your mental ability to play. As far as potential and could be and all that stuff, I never lived in a potential world because potential always got you fired or cut. So,
true.
Like, oh, potentially you could be a great receiver. Okay, well, you know, enjoy yourself. You've done everything we ask you to do. Like, yeah, don't do potential. Potential's bad. Potential's like, you know, the stock market crashing or something. You got to be careful with that.
Well, plus on the flip side, the Giants have a track record of finding a number of undrafted players, Howard, too, who have made the roster ultimately, and you would think that they wouldn't get priority over perhaps draft picks or even established veterans.
Well, what I would say is the best evidence of the Giants drafting is the two Super Bowl rings. I think that kind of explains it out. I think that, you know, success has spoiled a lot of the people who are watching and listening and talking about the Giants. If they're not in the playoffs every year, if they're not winning the Super Bowl every year or not competing for the Super Bowl every year, they're not doing a good job. There are teams that don't go to the Super Bowl. There are teams that
don't make the playoffs.
Don't make the playoffs. I mean, think about how well Cincinnati Bengals have drafted. They're making the playoffs throughout the first round every year. Think about how well, you know, the Niners are drafted. They finally got to a Super Bowl two or three years ago, and now they're not going to be back for a while. Think about the Arizona Cardinals, great draft picks. Think about, you know, all of these teams that have great draft picks, that have done well, that have put players in place. Have they made it? No. They just haven't. And the Giants have what mediocre drafts. And I don't mean mediocre drafts in the talent they're getting. I mean mediocre drafts in they're in the middle of the draft. When they're at the top of the draft, they get a good player. The player winds up playing a few years, does a good job, move on. When you get a player in the middle of the draft, you're getting a player that's in the middle of the draft. You're not getting the guy. You're getting, yeah, you're pretty good. You're like, oh, you're a first-round pick. Well, in some drafts, only the first 10 guys are the guy.
Depending on the depth that
year. Yeah, depending on the depth that year. So you can't – it's not every year that you're going to have a great year, a great draft pick. It's just not. Every year, your guy is not there. That's why you hear a lot of teams drafting the best player on the board because they don't want to draft the guy that they need at that position because that guy may not be good enough. So it's a lot of different philosophies, a lot of ways to think about it. Fans are going to always jump on and try to listen to the pundits. They're going to listen to Kuiper and those guys. I would have never taken it. I would have, like, okay, that's great. That's why you're sitting in home or sitting in the studio doing what you're doing instead of making – 8 times what you would be making as the GM of the team helping pick these players or 8 times as the head coach of a team because you don't know. You only are using saber matrix and doing all this
mathematical
stuff.
Mathematical equations.
I think that he looks like this. I'm sure he can do this. I feel like you don't know. Like, I was a 6th-round pick. Back then, it was the middle of the draft, but I was a 6th-round pick. I played 13 years.
Yeah.
Started 11 or 12 of the 13 years. 13 seasons. You don't know what you're going to get. You have no idea when you're looking at these guys. You just can't.
Ahmad Bradshaw, late round pick. Yeah, so there's Bradshaw. Always those examples, Howard. No, you're
100%
right.
Jesse Armstead. Yeah. Jesse Armstead, sixth or seventh, maybe eighth round.
David Deal's an
David Deal. Yeah. Oh, man.
Sean O'Hara was undrafted.
Rich Sorbert. Yeah. Rich Sorbert. So you don't know. You're working and you're hoping. You're looking at guys you think. Victor Cruz, no one wanted him. He got on the team because he was a local guy.
A local tryout
guy. Gets on the team, and now all of a sudden, every NFL commercial just about has a Victor Cruz spot in it. He's on Ballers. You know, you don't know. It's things you don't know. And things like the best way to explain, I think someone in the front office said about Victor, like, he looked pretty good and everything, and we thought we'd give him a shot. But the guy who showed up to play was not the guy we'd seen on film. The guy who showed up to play is not the guy that anybody scouted. Like, we don't know who that guy is. Like, it's kind of like someone replaced him. Like, hey, like, okay, this
flip
is
the switch.
Yeah, here's a guy in Patterson, you know, coming over. That's great. Going,
who's that guy?
You did go through the right house to pick him up, right? You get the right address. Like, it's a different person. And that's the thing that you don't know what's going to happen when they come here, when they go to, they show up at Kansas City, when they show up in Philadelphia, when they show up at whatever stadium it is. You have no idea what that person is going to be like when he leaves the comforts of where he was.
Finding those gems, always difference makers.
Absolutely.
At the end of the day when it comes to squeezing out talent in your 53-man roster. Howard, always a pleasure.
That's a great job.
Listen, John and I play basketball, so we may need a ringer. Now that you threw that out there,
I may have to ask you, man. Every time I see, I played last 2 years ago at a 3-on-3 tournament, I told the guys, like, listen, just because you guys are all hedge fund guys, this is great. I'll go out there with you. It looked like an NBA tryout. I'm like, I'm not doing anything. They're like, why? I was like, you're going to tear your Achilles. We're over 40 years old. We should not be out here. The guy who invited me, tore his Achilles.
There you go. See? You may be a soothsayer at the end of the day as well.
Yeah. No, we're just old.
Oh, boy. Appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday. It'll go back to 12:30, by the way, for Thursday and Friday. We moved it back today, obviously, because of OC's presser. For Howard Cross, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
All right, here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
He's got Cruz. 35-30.
Intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.